You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. The Frost Fair Affair, Chapter 3. Find us at the Frost Fair. The cold snap settled. By the next day, snow was a thick layer everywhere. Horse-drawn cabs were retired in favour of the occasional horse-drawn sledge on the icy roads. Salt was strewn liberally around to help with walking from block to block. Of course, those gentlemen privileged enough to have portal access were not hampered in the slightest in their visits to the court or their clubs, though a few might be mildly inconvenienced by the slowing of supplies and deliveries. Mnemosyne thought of her friend Lady Liesel, still in transit between the Isles of Sandwich and town. It made her shiver to think of it. Juno only allowed one day of housebound solitude before she rebelled, knocking on Neem's bedroom door almost as soon as the tray of tea and toast arrived. "Get up, lazy bones!" she hollered, swooping into Neem's room, wearing a brand new pelisse, the shade of a fresh mulberry. "We're going on an adventure." "I don't care what you say," said Neem, who had been perfectly comfortable with her breakfast and a book in bed, thank you very much. "I won't engage in snowball fights, nor street croquet. My sporting prowess is for warm weather only."
"But darling," said Juno, tugging at the curtains with a complete ineptitude that was somehow reassuring. "The printer said 3 days, didn't he? Your pamphlets should be ready." That was enough to have Neem sitting up straight and pushing off the covers. "It's 8 blocks away. Do you think I've been building up your walking skills for nothing? Best boots forward, Miss Seaborn." The walk to Fenchurch and Sons, master printers, was not as terrifying as Neem imagined. She and Juno both had warming charms on their gloves and socks, which went a long way to mitigating the wintry chill of the day. There was a surprising number of people out and about, despite the lack of traffic on the streets. Occasional children slid by, pulled by obliging adults on small sledges that had been dusted out of attics for the occasion. Still, Neem was rather longing for a hot cup of tea by the time they arrived at Brill Street. She found herself glancing around in hope of a chocolate shop, rather than paying attention to where she was going. It was Juno who spotted the sign first. "Dash it, they're closed," she announced. Clearly being married to Henry was having an effect on her vocabulary. "What?" said Neem, hurrying forward. The door was indeed locked fast, and there was a card in the window that read, "Relocated due to weather. Find us at the Frost Fair." "Is there really a Frost Fair this year?" "Goodness," said Juno with glee. "The Scamander's frozen over then. What fun! We'll have to head home and change. Can't wear any old thing to a frost fair. There hasn't been one for years. The forecast must be for snow and more snow."
"Must be," said Neem, shivering despite her warming charms. "I understand food sellers and the like taking their wares to the ice, but a printer?"
"Printers most of all," said a male voice very near them. Both women jumped. They had not seen him approach. He was a small gentleman, with a shock of dark hair sticking out from beneath his hat, and a carelessly tied cravat that clashed badly with his coat. Neem didn't know him at all, but he clearly recognised Juno, as he nodded his head to her.
"Your Grace, pardon the interruption."
"Not at all," said Juno, looking wildly intrigued. "Are you here for the print works also, Mr. Savini?"
"I was."
He raised himself on the toes of his boots to peer in the window, looking most disgruntled. "I had an order for several copies of a satirical print by a friend of mine. I suppose I must try and find this printing fellow on the ice, and hope he brought the pages with him along with his press instead of leaving them locked up in the shop."
"Wouldn't it be foolish to move something as heavy as a printing press
onto the ice," said Neem. "What if it breaks?"
"That's the risk, of course," said the gentleman with a shrug. "But if it's anything like last frost fair, the river's already covered with braziers, sledges, and half a ton of people walking to and fro. They'll have stamped it down good and hard to test the strength before taking anything valuable out there. You'd be amazed what fellows are prepared to risk to make their fortune selling sixpenny souvenir cards. It's all about proving you were there, of course, and the cards wouldn't sell half so well if they weren't printed on the spot."
"There was a frost fair the first year I was out," said Juno, sounding charmed. "Chestnuts, hot cider, and a terribly talented tightrope walker who crossed the Scamander from shore to shore on a single wire." The gentleman's eyes lit up. "Was that the fair with the elephant?"
"Goodness, no, I'm not that old."
She fluttered her eyelashes at him a little. "I was promised I'd see an elephant, but, alas, not that year."
"Maybe this winter will bring you better fortune."
The gentleman drew back and bowed to them both, a short, abrupt motion, far shallower than you might expect anyone to bend in the presence of a known duchess.
"Ladies?"
"Goodness," Juno murmured as he walked away. "What wouldn't I give to see what he's printing?"
"Do you know that gentleman?" Neem asked.
"Only by repute. He's at least as notorious as you are, my dear. By profession rather than family scandal. That is Galbraith Savinny, the anti-royalist."
"Oh," said Neem. "In that case, we were honoured to get even half a bow out of him.
Isn't he that fellow you were hoping would denounce our campaign, so the stuffiest earls and lords would support it?"
Juno agreed. "I may have been wrong about that. I don't think that young man can be predicted to do anything one expects."
She shook herself out of a moment of reverie. "Come along, the frost fair, your pamphlets, and if we're very lucky, an elephant." Getting to the frost fair was more of a production than expected, not only because both ladies were so fatigued and cold after their long walk back to Stormbolt, they required several rounds of tea and sandwiches to regain their strength. By then, Henry had returned home with several gentlemen friends, who were so delighted at interrupting the luncheon, a casual meal generally reserved for ladies, that more ham and fruit and cheese was called for until it became an entire civilised party. There was no sign of Mr. Thornberry. When pressed, Henry claimed to have no idea where one might find his personal spellcracker.
"Probably drifted into a library and got distracted, eh, what?"
By the time they set out for the frost fair, they were a crowd of eight, including a marquess, a famous poet, two uniformed members of the Queen's Guard, and a political secretary who was following the Duke around in order to get him to sign off on a stack of paperwork for the Court of Lords, and had so far been fed in three separate households while engaged in this task.
"For goodness sake, sign the dratted things before we set off, Henry, or there'll be contracts papering the river," complained Juno. But what with one thing and another, the secretary was still attached to their party when they left Stormbolt.
Also with them, four of Henry's favourite hounds. Juno had put her foot down when they came south for the winter, insisting that he not bring every animal he owned into their splendid townhouse. Four was their compromise. Each of the hounds, like Henry himself, were large and sprawling creatures, who liked to try and run in several directions at once, despite the leashes that dangled at their necks. The wide ribbon river of Scamander ran in a spiralling circle, creating a smaller island in the centre of the Isle of Town. The central island, known to all as Court, contained Wistwaria Palace, the Court and Parliament buildings, several fine parks, an opera house, and a temple. Neem had visited the Isle of Court a few times in her youth and associated it with a feeling of constant anxiety that she might break something precious. The freezing over of the river meant, of course,
that the ferries and swan-shaped boats that usually made up for an inadequacy of bridges were grounded. The more entrepreneurial ferrymen had either winched wheels onto their boats in order to continue earning their daily coin, or else hired sledges to tow about by hand or horse. The secret to a frost fair was that nothing was planned in advance. You never knew until it happened whether the river would freeze over in a given winter, and if so, if it would turn out to be a long enough cold snap to stay frozen. Neem's mamma had always spoken airily of frost magic, assuring young Neem that such things were in the hands of the Queen and her Majesties. But now, stepping on to the frozen river, Neem felt no presence of magic within the ice. Upon it, certainly. There was small magic everywhere, in the braziers that burned hot without falling straight through into the river, in the warming charms that kept the affluent from feeling the chill too badly, and, of course, in the displays and exhibitions. There were dancers, artisans, conjurers, buskers, charmsmiths and brothel keepers, all rubbing shoulders and jostling for space. The tents, stalls and temporary dwellings that sprung up overnight fell into a sort of mess of streets and alleys with no logic to it. An orange seller hawked her wares next to an apothecary, next to a teller of fortunes. The air was rich with the scents of perfume, cinnamon and roasting meat. The crowd was alive with the thrill of something illicit and edged with danger. "Look out for printers!" Juno commanded her small troop of followers, including her husband. "Those robbers!" snorted one of the guards, a youngster who had clearly joined up for the uniform. "I hear they charge 5 pennies for one of those cards, just because it's signed to say, 'Printed upon the ice.' I bet they fake it." 6 pence, said the other, tilting his hat so as to show off his plumes to greater effect. "They can't fake it, not if they print the date. No one knew we'd have a frost fair this week. Cheaper for them to be authentic, don't you know?" "I shall have a toffee apple," announced Henry, and was promptly distracted by a Punch and Judy show. The portable puppet theatre, brightly striped in scarlet and white, was squashed between a sausage stall and a silversmith. A carpet, already damp and rather pungent, lay in front of the theatre for the audience to sit upon. This was not a show for children, though a few managed to duck away from their parents long enough to catch a scene or two of the bawdy jokes and brutal antics. "I hate those puppets," sighed Juno, even as every man in their party was instantly captivated, guffawing at the comedy violence of Mr. Punch and the policeman. "I'd like to see Judy take that stick and give Punch a taste of his own medicine." She plucked impatiently at Neem's sleeve. "Come on, let's leave these gadabouts to their entertainment. I think I see our printer over there." In the end, they tried 4 different printer's stalls before they located Fenchurch and Sons, just past the Tethys Bridge. The printing press was housed inside a shabby-looking tent, papered with posters and flyers, between a glassblower's stand and a cider tent. A roaring crowd were already queuing to purchase those infamous 6-penny cards, signed and dated, to prove they'd been printed right here, today, on the frozen Scamander. The printer's tent and its sales table out front was staffed by a harried-looking pregnant woman, with 2 toddlers at her heels, and an older boy who gravely took the pennies and handed over the cards. The curtains were pinned back wide, so all customers could see the magnificent printing press was genuinely here, grinding away to stamp more cards. "Is Mr. Fenchurch around?" Juno asked when she and Neem finally reached the front of the queue. The woman gave her a filthy look. "If he was, don't you think he'd be working same as me? What are you after, madam?" Neem nudged her way in, smiling politely. "I'm Miss Seaborne, I had a stack of pamphlets to collect. The shop is closed.
Collected already, the woman said shortly. Next!
Wait! Collected by whom? Nim asked, rather in shock.
Your maid, I suppose.
I don't have a maid.
The busy woman gave her a glare that could have thawed the Frost Fair from edge to edge.
Is that my problem? She signed for it.
Show us, Juno demanded, in the voice of a woman who was about to make a scene.
The printer's wife sighed, reached under the table and slapped a ledger before them. She motioned the next customer forward. Shunted to one side, Neem flipped the book to the last page and saw an indecipherable scrawl just below the neater signature of Mr. G. Savini, who had collected a box of prints. Satirical.
This could be anyone, she protested. You just let my pamphlets walk off in the hands of a stranger.
Mrs. Fenchurch shrugged again, though she was looking rather embarrassed now, like she was rather ashamed of herself.
Well, how was I to know? She said weakly. Who'd want a bunch of pamphlets about transport politics? You'll have to wait if you want them doing over. This ice mat only lasts a few days, and the profit from a frost fair means new shoe leather for all my kids.
Who'd want a bunch of pamphlets about transport politics? Yes, indeed. That was the question.
Juno leaned in, reading over Neem's shoulder.
Not sure what's worse, she said thoughtfully, if they were stolen by some stranger or by someone who knows exactly who you are.
Do you recognize that signature? Neem asked, wondering from where that particular thought had come.
But Juno, quite uncharacteristically, refused to say more. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at SheepMightFly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.